Hello and welcome to the Yard Pro Show, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. I'm one of your hosts today, Mills Grant.
And I'm Scott B.
It is an absolute delight to be here, is it not, Scott?
It is.
What you pointing at?
You said you didn't have any paper.
Oh, yeah, I know. Run a little short on the paper in the printer. Hey, don't tell him this, man. He's pointing at my notes.
I was like, what is he going to come up with today without paper?
Yeah, I'm out of paper. I had to use cardstock. It's all curled up. It's nice thick, man. Feel that.
It is.
It's like some official document, man.
Go put those on front doors somewhere.
You know, I had to go get a birth certificate. Had to get passports for Emily and I. And, you know, they just print birth certificates. It's just like cheap, flimsy paper. I'm like, really? Can you not print them on a decent paper anymore? I mean, it's got a beautiful blue border. Proud owner of a passport now. Going to leave the country in May. Do a little horticultural research for all the listeners and participants of the Yard Pros.
And where are we going?
Peru.
Peru?
Yeah.
Peru? Yeah.
Should be fun. Should be interesting.
In May.
Yeah, busy season. I mean, that's what you do. You take vacation when it gets busy, right?
That's what I do.
Yeah, makes sense, right? So, folks, you are tuned into the Yard Pro Show today, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. It's pretty simple. If you'd like to find us during the week, you can visit us at www.carolinafreshfarms.com. Scott, let's talk about this week. Let's quit talking about May and spring because we are in the depths of winter.
Depression.
Almost. We're not quite to winter solstice, the shortest day of the year, where the sun is at the lowest angle of the year. It's pretty interesting. You know, the sun changes angles every day. So really high on the horizon on summer solstice, the highest point, right? Mm-hmm. And the longest day of the year. We are quickly approaching December the 21st. It's not today, but we're quickly approaching that, where it's the shortest day of the year, and the sun is at the lowest angle. And if you can't tell, well, by goodness, how long did this snow hang around on the north side of things in tree lines? Hung around a while, right? Mm-hmm. Know why snow hangs around in the winter? Not just because it's cold. Sun's at a lot lower angle, different angle.
Not hitting it.
Doesn't melt off as quick.
That's right.
Takes a little bit longer, right? But I noticed on the way into the studio this morning, I really didn't see any snow. Maybe a few piles like in parking lots where it was plowed up and pushed. So wherever you are, it's been an interesting week wherever you are in the state. It's been a wet week, right?
Yes.
An extremely wet week, a wet month, a wet fall. As a matter of fact, Scott, we have come to that most important time of the day. The drought report. Oh, go ahead.
Didn't know you printed on that nice paper.
Yes, we're going to frame this one. Folks, it is time for your weekly South Carolina USDA drought report update. And guess what, Scott? You're not going to believe it.
Holy guacamole.
It's on cardstock, too. I'm going to give it to you. You can keep it.
I'm going to color it in.
You can keep it. Look at there. Every county in the state is white. Meaning there is no drought in the state of South Carolina.
Don't put it close.
So you can have it. There's your something to color for your holiday enjoyment.
Oh.
Yeah. But, you know, it shouldn't be pretty obvious. I mean, it should be pretty obvious to you. I mean, geez, you walk in the yard right now and like, okay, I left footprints in my yard and it wasn't footprints in the snow. So it's been wet. And, you know, that kind of led to, you know, across the state of South Carolina, you know, western North Carolina, from Asheville east, it seemed like, is where all the snow was. Not much over towards, you know, Graham County and Waynesville and those areas where we normally think about a tremendous amount of snow in a system like this. But, you know, I know at the house we had at least 4 inches, maybe more, on the east side of Greenville. And a lot of trees down. A lot of trees. Filled capacity, not field, F-I-L-L, field, as in a farm field. Soils have been at field capacity virtually, I would imagine, every county in the state prior to this event. Wind picks up. You got heavy, wet snow, ice. You lose a lot of trees, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's really amazing how many trees were lost. A lot of pine trees. A lot of trees just give up. You know, hey, I'm done. I don't think I like standing anymore. I think I'll just give up. I think I'll lay over today, right? Problem with trees, once they lay over, they don't have arms, so they can't stand back up. So be aware of that. You know, be aware of that. You know, unfortunately, I know our neighbor, he lost not only 4 or 5 Leland cypresses that were very tall, very old, very mature, looked like very healthy, and they were very healthy trees, other than the fact soils are so saturated, right? It's a big wind sail. The direction that the wind came, and they were iced over, so they were carrying 8 times their normal weight, they toppled over. So he lost like 4 or 5 of them, plus a pickup truck, because it crushed a cab. So be aware of that in your landscape. You know, as we're going, you know, we're just beginning winter. So be aware of that. Look at your tree situation. If you got some things that are unhealthy, I would suggest you call a certified, licensed, insured tree company. Maybe have them come out and take a look and do a little bit. You know, there's some things you could do yourself, some limbs, things of that nature. You know, if you thin a tree out, you take some of this away. And I think we talked about it last week. Remember we had our good friend, Class A Superintendent Paul Brandenburg from Furman Golf Club. He said, I couldn't say it enough, so I'm continuing it this week, right? But, you know, we had we talked a little bit about that, what may happen. So, and I know the rest of the state, you folks saw a good bit of rain. Some of it may say it's welcome. I think it's welcome for about 2 or 3 hours, and now you wish it would leave because here we are on a Saturday. So, and it's still rainy. Folks, we would love to hear from you. Now, the show is a lot easier if we get some phone calls or whatnot. I hadn't asked for them yet, but it's time to do that. I say let's. 'Tis the season. Let's light it up like a Christmas tree, right, Scott?
Let's do it.
1-800-347-1063. That's 800-347-1063. And as always, you can text us at 71307. If not, we'll find some other interesting things to talk about. And it will not be about nitrogen sources and how they react with plants and in the soil. Instead, it's the third Sunday of Advent tomorrow, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. 'Tis the season, man. It's coming quick. So, keeping with that, let's talk a little bit about some Christmas plants. You know, last week we talked about the Christmas tree.
Yep.
Remember that? So what do we, a little bit of refresher, what do we say about the Christmas tree? You know, legend has it.
From Germany?
From Germany,
mm-hmm.
You know. And it was before that, I'm sure, you know. There's a lot of, you know, history, especially when you go back that far and beyond. I mean, there's a lot of speculation. There's a lot of notes, I'm sure. But as we know it, as we use it, the speculation is it came from Martin Luther through Germany. He was the first to use it as a Christian symbol. So I know a lot of folks have Christmas trees in their house. We talked a little bit about it. How about the poinsettia? What do you know about it?
We do this every year.
Yeah.
And there's a schedule. I didn't know. My niece was in town last weekend, so we took her downtown Greenville.
Yeah.
There's a statue of Mr. Poinsett right there.
Joyal Poinsett,
yeah.
Downtown Greenville.
Been
there a while.
Gave her the history of that on that. She's like, I did not know that.
That's right. So Joyal Poinsett in the 1800s was the first ambassador to Mexico. And he later became Secretary of War, I think, for Monroe. I can't remember the president that appointed him to that. But he was an amateur botanist, I guess you'd say. He was a doctor, actually. Medical doctor, so his former schooling was not in botany. However, he was an amateur botanist from Charleston, okay? So, but, and everybody goes, oh, he's from Greenville. No, he was from Charleston. He owned a plantation in Greenville. I'm not sure where, somewhere in Greenville County. And so Greenville has claimed, you know, there's a lot of Poinsett Highway, Poinsett Bridge up around Campo Indian. Yeah, was the bridge and the old highway that used to lead to Asheville, right? Still there. Poinsett, let's see, the Poinsett Club, the Poinsett Hotel. That's where all this came from because he had this property in Greenville. He had greenhouses. So when he was in Mexico, he sent some clippings back from the poinsettia, which it wasn't named that at the time. I forget the name. And it was southern part of Mexico. So he sends us back, and then he kind of shared some of this with some of his friends, one of them being Mr. Bartram, who was a very well-known botanist and artist. You know, his old prints and lithographs are pretty neat. But it began to get popularized, right? So he really didn't produce it, put it into mass production. But here's the interesting thing. It's football season. The Poinsettia Bowl's coming up. Where's it played? I always kind of scratch my head because you look at Greenville, South Carolina, the state of South Carolina. There's so many things that are about poinsett. But the Poinsettia Bowl, what state's it played in? You know?
No.
California. And I'm like, interesting. So they just rip off the, you know,
and the
flower
reason why?
That a Southern guy found. Because the production of poinsettias in the commercial industry for all of us to buy was started by a grower in California. And at one time, this family, they produced and sold like 90% of all poinsettias sold worldwide because they were the first ones in the 50s, in the 1950s. They figured out a process of how to grow and produce these so that every stem would flower. So because naturally this plant grows 13, 14, 15 foot tall. It's a weed, okay? Now, it doesn't really flower. Well, it flowers. The little yellow thing you see in the middle, that's the flower. Mm-hmm. The red leaves, that's not flowers. That's a bract. It's modified leaf tissue, okay? So it turns colors is all it is. It's modified leaf tissue. It turns colors, okay? You know why it turns colors? Huh?
Go ahead.
Daylight. Interesting. So you can hold a poinsettia. It's a tropical plant. You can hold it over the year if you would like. Okay, it's going to go green sometime after Christmas. The color's going to wash out. It's going to go green. Put it in bright light. Once it gets warm, anywhere in the state of South Carolina, you can move it outside, leave it in a pot, move it outside. May or June, maybe cut it about half the height off of it. It's going to flush out new growth. And in September, you want to bring it inside, and you want to exclude it from light for a minimum of 14 hours for about 30 days every day. So you stick it in a closet during the day. I mean, when I say exclude it from light, this is greenhouse production, this is horticultural production. A lot of people don't understand this. But when they produce poinsettias in greenhouses, it's pretty phenomenal because they completely, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, you walk into a poinsettia production house. Well, actually, you don't walk into it. You know why? Any light. You know, your cell phone lights up in that greenhouse. It interrupts nighttime. And you have to start the whole process over again because it's all about daylight hours. See, interesting. Everything horticultural, it's like the leaves. We talked about it this fall. Why do they change colors? Everybody, it's getting cooler. Well, that's part of it, soil temperatures. An equal and just as large, maybe bigger part of it is daylight hours. Days get shorter, right? But, yeah, you can take a poinsettia and you could virtually have this thing forever if you tended to it. You could buy one and have it forever.
That sounds like a lot of work.
It does. I think it's a lot cheaper just to go buy it.
Yeah, good Christmas time.
But, you know, that family out there, I think it's not Echol. I can't remember. It started with an E. But that family today, they still are, like, produce, like, 60% of all poinsettias sold in the world.
So what you're suggesting is we should have the Poinsett Bowl here in Greenville.
That's what I'm thinking. Or somewhere in the state of South Carolina.
That would be neat.
Poinsettia Bowl should be in the state of South Carolina because Joy Poinsett founded this. There's a history, and the reason it really came into Christmas is a history, and I guess her English translated name would be Maria. There was a young girl who was going to, in essence, a Christmas service, and in their culture and in their religion, they wouldn't, and I would imagine and speculate Catholic, but they would always, the kids would always take something to lay at the altar or at the foot of the manger as an offering, you know, for the birth of Jesus, similar to what the wise man, mm-hmm. Brought the gifts. She didn't have anything to give because she was a poor. So she was walking through the countryside, and she collected the bracts off of the poinsettia that was considered a weed and tied them together in a nice bouquet and laid them at the foot of the manger in honor of the birth of Jesus. Nice story, right? And that's how it became known as the Christmas flower. Interesting.
Very.
See, horticulture, man, plants, landscaping, it touches our lives. We don't realize it.
Well, just like indigo.
Yeah. Oh, and that's the other thing. The Aztecs used this particular plant and weed for like a maroon or a purple dye. They would extract it. And the latex, because it has latex, they would also use it for other things or for a medicinal purposes, for upset stomachs, things of that nature. Odd, isn't it? Because you've always been told that poinsettias are poisonous. Yeah, and University of Illinois Extension's done some research, and a 50-pound kid would have to digest like 50 leaves of a poinsettia, or no, excuse me, 500 leaves of a poinsettia plant before they became sick. Okay, so it's not toxic or poisonous in the sense, oh, if you eat one bite of it, you're right. Definitely ill. It is considered poisonous. It is considered, I guess, in essence, toxic. But you got
a large quantity.
You got to ingest a lot of it, and then you know, it's vomiting, it's upset stomach, things of that nature is what it does to you. There's a lot of plants like that out there that we have thought that they are. And there's some other little interesting tidbits that some point, if we have time today, I'll give you some other interesting little tidbits about the poinsettia. So today is about the poinsettia, right?
Okay.
Ties into the Yard Pro
Show.
Yes,
it does.
Right? So, Scott, we're going to go to Ron, who has found us in Greer at 1-800-347-1063. Hello, Ron, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Hey, actually, I'm in Taylor's. That's besides the point, you know. we could drink way too much water and drown ourselves.
That's right.
Here's a couple questions for you. One is it too late to put any of those fertilizer stakes in for the trees and shrubs and stuff?
No, you'll be fine.
Okay. Next question is, and I got to follow up on this. Is these leaves that are on the ground right now, they're all real wet, hard to blow. How long can they stay on the yard? You know, I have summer grass, so how long can they stay on there before I got to really get them off?
The sooner the better. I mean, but you do have it. You've got a warm season lawn, right?
You got zoysia and cavalier. Yeah.
So you should be good because you get a little bit of buffer. I mean, because as it begins to dry out in the next day or so, you know, even if you leave the leaves there, they're not sitting down in that thatch layer. They should be sitting on top of that, what is now probably dormant grass or close to dormant grass. I think you're going to be, with a warm season lawn, you can leave them a little bit longer. Now, like me with a cool season lawn that's been struggling because all the rain and cloud cover and just weird weather, you know, wet weather this fall, you know, a lot of fescue lawns are struggling, and leaving those wet, heavy leaves on there is just going to create havoc because we can't get sunlight, you know, to the plant, and we need to grow some fescue. Now, this coming week, Ron, yay to us, it's going to be warmer in the 60s and sunny. I mean, that's pretty phenomenal at the first part of the week, and then back in the 50s or low 50s by the end of the week. But it's going to be some pretty good growing weather for those that have cool season lawns. So if it were me, those that have cool season lawns later today, I'd take a blower, you know, if it dries out enough, go out and get some leaves off the lawn, or certainly tomorrow when the sun's out. The same with you. Once it dries tomorrow, if you want to let them dry and then run your lawnmower and mulch them up or either blow them off, make it easier, I think with a warm season lawn, you can get a few extra days. But at the same token, the sooner the better. We don't want to leave those wet leaves laying on it any more than you have to.
Yeah, okay. Well, that sets the stage for that one. And this reflects on that one. What I'm looking forward to this Christmas is the reality that the birth of Christ was accompanied by the greatest force, military force in the universe, could wipe out every military force that ever existed in this world. The heavenly host, which is the heavenly army, proclaimed a victory chant at the birth of Christ. He was going to win, and he did win. So that's why he was raised from the dead, came out of the grave. One of the things that's going to get changed when the new heavens and the new earth comes is there's not going to be any more leaves.
Yeah. That's true.
You know, there's not going to be any more of this stuff that's all emblematic of the curse of the fall, which he came to straighten out. That's going to be fantastic. So as I look at Christmas and I look at the birth of Christ, I'm thinking, yes, the victory's been won. There will be a day of perfection. Hey, gentlemen, have a great day.
You too.
You too, Ron.
And Merry Christmas, Ron.
Same to you.
Bye-bye. You know, 'tis the season is what I can say, Scott. And there is a reason for the season. And sometimes we forget that, right? It's funny how every time we come around to some of these major holidays, and they're religious holidays, Christmas and Easter, that even our show, the Yard Pro Show, takes on a little bit different feel and vibe, does it not?
Yes.
It humbles you. It makes you really sit there and think about what is this really all about. So, oh, Scott, let's go to the... yes, here we go. Here's a good one. Let's go to the text lines. In some places in Mexico, poinsettia is called La Noche Buena. I had read that. Basically, the Christmas Eve flower. not the exact translation. Mm-hmm. I'm no expert. This is when you wish you had your daughter here, you know? I'm sure she's listening. Yeah, right. You know, she finished her last exam at Clemson for the semester. She's a junior.
Is she a junior already?
Yeah, can you believe that? 7:30 last night. Friday night, 7:30, they had exams.
Schedule.
Can you believe that? 7:30 on a Friday night.
Tuesday night, they're 9 to 11.
Yeah. Crazy, isn't it? Yeah, they did Tuesday night exams. So, yeah, crazy. I have a Bermuda lawn. With the business of life in the season, I wasn't able to spread pre-emergent. Is it too late for that, or should I spray weed killer like Honcho? Thanks, Justin. Okay, so Honcho is, if I'm not mistaken, that is glyphosate. Okay, and we've talked about that. You could do what you want to do, but
I definitely wouldn't do it right now.
No, it's way too early. But a non-selective herbicide the theory is I can spray it on dormant grass and then I'll be safe. Well, yeah, if the grass is truly dormant, you will. The problem I see with that is, especially now in the month of December, anywhere in the state, the grass is not truly dormant. So please don't fall into that. And you think from all of our listeners from Midlands all the way down the coast of South Carolina, Scott, you know, even in January or February, does it ever really go truly dormant where the stem tissue, you know, the stolons have no green where they're truly dormant? Because any green stem or leaf tissue has the potential, especially leaves, but even stem tissue, has the potential to uptake the active ingredient, thereby causing problems, okay? Maybe not certain death of the lawn, but certainly problems. So I'd be a little careful of that. If you hadn't put the pre-emergent out yet, I would suggest you go ahead and still get some pre-emergent out because it's going to help you the rest of the winter. But then there's some selective herbicides if you do have weed issues as we get into January, February. There's
clean
some selective herbicides you could use sparingly to clean it up. So there are other options other than Honcho. I'd stay away from it. Scott, we do have the phone lines are open, 1-800-347-1063. We have to take that bottom of the hour break. You're listening to the Yard Pro Show, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. Please give us a call in the bottom of the hour break, or you can text us at 71307. We'd love to talk with you today. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Yard Pro Show, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. I'm one of your hosts today, Mills Grant.
And I'm Scott Beard.
And it is an absolute delight to be here. It is not far before Christmas. I guess everybody's out. What do you say?
We're sleeping in.
Running around, getting ready for that holiday season. Folks, it's a pretty simple format to the show. Anything and everything to do with the landscape and lawn, we would love to talk about it and talk to you about it if you have questions. Without you, the participant, it couldn't happen. During the week, if for some reason you're bashful or you don't feel like calling in today, but you have a question about your lawn or landscape, it's very simple. If you will visit www.carolinafreshfarms.com, there you will find a link to all of our retail stores in the great state of South Carolina, and you can send us pictures, you can send us emails, you can contact the store manager, the stores directly, and get some advice or find simple things like a map of how to get to our stores and our hours, correct?
Correct.
As a matter of fact, what are our Christmas hours going to be so that they know now?
So we'll be closed Monday, Christmas Eve, closed
yep.
Tuesday, Christmas Day.
That's right. So well, we will
Monday
be open
will be
Saturday
closed.
Prior to Christmas. We will be open from 8 to noon.
And then Wednesday, regular time.
Wednesday, regular time, the day
and
after
this
Christmas.
This following week, the same as New Year's Eve, and
that's
New
right.
Year's Day will be closed.
So, unfortunately, sod is a perishable product, and we know nothing says, I love you, honey, and Merry Christmas, like a pallet of sod sitting in your living room, right?
That's love.
But we cannot deliver that on Christmas Eve this year. I apologize. So, but we will, keep in mind, we have families, and we want to celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ as well in our own ways at our homes, right? So
right.
We will be closed those days. Wanted to make you aware of that. Scott, we're going to go back to the phone lines. We have Dan in Columbia. Hello, Dan, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Hey, thanks for calling in. It's great to talk to somebody down in the Midlands.
Well, all right, yeah. So, I listen to you sometimes when I get out and about on Saturday morning.
That sounds
appreciate
right.
you being there.
Well, we appreciate you folks down that way, and I hope y'all escaped, and I think y'all did escape a lot of the icy, snowy weather last weekend, correct?
We did. Kind of pool overflowed, but that's about the worst of it.
Yeah, that's a lot of water out there, that's for sure. So what can we help you with,
that's
Dan?
That's right. Well, I've been trying to nurture a lawn for in this particular plot for 23 years. We put centipede down that declined after about 15 years, and not much grows there. A lot of shade. No possibility even growing anything in the backyard. So what I did was started mulching the leaves and lots of pine straw and putting them in the backyard, and now I got 6 inches of mulch back there. No more room. Don't like hauling it off. I've been mulching it now into the front yard, and I'm just beginning to wonder, am I gonna overwhelm that yard with mulch?
Yes and no. I mean, I think you certainly can if you got your plantings and everything. We got to be real careful about continually elevating our depth of mulch, because as that mulch deteriorates, we're making more soil. And if we continually increase that depth of soil or depth of mulch around the base of a tree or even our shrubs, yes, that could lead to some problems at the basal stem of that plant with some rotting, some insect infestation. So we do have to be aware of that. So I have seen this. I've seen this on tree rings, especially on commercial property, where people want to come in and just put too much mulch in. Because, oh, it looks so pretty. You know, it's kind of like the old idea, you know, hey, if I put 2 ounces of Roundup per gallon to kill a weed, if I put 8, I bet it kills it better. No, it doesn't. It's the same thing with mulch. You know, hey, I think I'll put 8 inches out this year instead of 2 inches. 1 to 2 inches of a good double, or 2 inches of a good double ground mulch should be more than sufficient to last you a season or a year.
I'm wondering, am I wrecking the grass? Can the lawn itself?
Oh, the lawn itself.
The mulch being ground into it.
Yeah, I think the lawn itself can. Now, what's going to happen, if you ever notice this, your driveway and some other people out there chuckle and scratch their head. You know, back in the day when that driveway was first poured or formed or laid as asphalt, the grade was probably a little bit below that driveway. And 10, 15, in your case, 20-plus years later, it's probably above your driveway, right? Because grass eliminates virtually all erosion if you have a full lawn of grass. Grass also generates and makes soil, because as all those leaves and stuff, the dead parts of the plant deteriorate, it turns into soil. The same with this mulch, you're grinding up these leaves. So the only risk you're going to run into is you're just going to keep increasing the elevation of your lawn. As far as the health of the plant, as long as you're not completely burying the grass with mulch leaves sitting on top where you smother it out in the winter, there should be no issue whatsoever. I mean, it'll tolerate it.
Yeah, I mulch it up pretty good. I got to plug in the mower and grind, run over it a few times. And whenever the leaves gather, it's been almost a weekly thing now to grind it up and make the lawn look at least somewhat kept.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm just wondering if, what I used to do is bag it up and haul it in the back, but there's no more room back there.
No more room.
I do stand the risk of getting too much around the trees that are back there. So.
I think if you mulch up the leaves, catch them on a good dry day, mulch them up really good so you get fine particles, it's gonna deteriorate pretty quickly. Is it going to elevate or add to the soil layer over time in the soil? Certainly it is, but I don't see it as a major issue. The one thing you may want to consider, though, because you're going to have this really nice organic content on the top of the soil, you may want to consider going in once during the growing season in the summer, if you're not doing it, and core aerify the lawn in a couple of directions, because that'll help you that'll just help you keep from layering as quickly in your soil profile. But I can't see where there'd be a huge detrimental effect with that. I think you're fine to do it.
All right. And pine straw the same way, right?
Pine needles, that's a little more cumbersome. The thing I don't like about pine needles, number one, as they deteriorate, they will decrease the pH a little bit in the soil, but that's a long-term effect. So just maintain your pH, make sure you're taking soil samples. The other thing I'd say about pine needles, they have a higher ligand content. That's why they don't deteriorate as quickly, and we can use them as a mulch around our shrubs. So make sure you really catch them when they're dry, and you may have to go out there and grind them several times with the mower with really good sharp blades so you get the particles and you get it ground up fine enough to get down into that thatch layer of the plant or into the crown of the plant.
Yeah, I blow some of them up into the beds.
Yeah.
And so I don't have to buy pine straw, and I like that part too. Don't have to pay somebody to come spread it out.
Exactly.
All right. Been real helpful. I'm trying to nurture that sprigged that dead centipede with St. Augustine, and it's been amazing over the years how that those stolons have spread.
It'll grow, that's for sure.
I've almost got it covered. I get a few places where there's some fungus comes in. I haven't treated it in a while, and I might have to do that this year. But keep
an eye on it. I think large patches probably already inoculated a lot of lawns like yours and other folks who didn't use fungicide because of the excessive amount of moisture we had this fall. So keep an eye on that as we get into April and May in your neck of the woods and we begin to transition. If you see some areas, larger areas the side of the hood of a truck or a car that are brown and not greening up, you probably have some active large patch. So just keep an eye on that and have the fungicide on hand would be my suggestion, because I do feel like you're probably going to need it come spring.
I might have to come find your store and get some fungicide that's safe and tolerable.
That'll be great, man. Dan, we appreciate it. Hope you have a Merry Christmas.
I'm working at it, helping with the children's Christmas program. Today, we're doing the last practice, so it should be fun.
Awesome. Well, you have a Merry Christmas, and thank you for giving us a call this morning.
All right, Merry Christmas to y'all. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You know, great call and great question. We've gotten a few of those this fall about mulching leaves, mm-hmm. and I don't necessarily have an issue with it. If you can catch them on a dry day, the key is to get that leaf litter, that mulch material, into the crown of the plant, or down. Let's not say into. It sounds like we're going to put it up on a pedestal. We want it down into the crown of the plant, right?
Correct.
And it should deteriorate fairly quickly, right?
Especially chew them up really good.
Exactly. Scott, we're going to stay, real quickly. When do you plant bulbs? Is it too late to plant winter pansies? No, to plant winter pansies. You can plant them now. They're not going to do much. It's cold. Soil temperature's cold. But they're going to look beautiful late winter, early spring, okay? So you can enjoy them late in the season. As far as bulbs, you could go do it now. It's a little wet and mucky. I'd probably wait for a little bit drier weather, you know. But I'd get them in the ground pretty quick, though, because they need a chilling effect. A lot of your bulbs have to have a certain number of chilling hours, okay, temperatures below 50, 40, somewhere in that neighborhood, in order to grow, prosper, and bloom the following spring. So I'd go ahead. If you're not going to plant them now, I would maybe put them in the refrigerator. Hold them in the refrigerator so that they do get this chilling requirement that they need. And then you can plant them a little bit later on. But if you can get out there and it's not too mucky, go after it. Scott, let's go back to the phone lines. We have Randy in Spartanburg who has a very interesting question, I do believe, and a very pertinent question this time of year. Hello, Randy, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Good morning, guys. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Question for you. Back mid-August, I put out about 5 pallets of your Palisade Zoysia in my yard, and it was perfect timing with all the hot weather, and it got plenty of water, and it's done great. I'm just wondering what I need to do this winter. I know I don't need to water it, but from all the rain we've had, but anything else in particular that needs to be done to it during the winter?
Moisture is the number one key, Randy, and right now the good Lord's taking care of that for us, that's for sure. So the only other thing, I say moisture, we need to make sure we keep it moist, but that doesn't mean we want to keep it standing in water. So we need to make sure we got adequate drainage. Keep an eye on the moisture and, be patient. You may see being a newly sodded lawn going into winter. I always tell folks with a warm season grass like Zoysia, no, it's not the optimal time to plant sod, but you can be successful. But do expect that you may have some winter injury, depending on how cold we get, what our moisture is like, and how well you manage the moisture in the lawn. We may see a little bit of winter injury in the spring green up during transition, but don't throw the hat in if you see that. Give it some time, okay? Because we don't have a well, deep, established root system, so the grass is a little bit weaker, and any abnormality or any harsh weather we may get, you may see that a little bit. So the risk to you, you might have 10 or 15% of the lawn that doesn't transition great, but if you're patient and fertilize it, I would say by mid to late May, you're in the upstate, certainly by 1st of June, you should be 95 to 100% transitioned and actively growing and establishing a nice lawn. You know, when you sod, people don't always, they think it's more like carpet, right, Scott? Mm-hmm. I'm going to have sod installed and, you know, we're going to go do everything we want to do on it tomorrow. No, it's a living product and you have to establish it. And even if you had sodded this in June or July of this year, yes, it's more established, but sod, really, warm season grasses, it takes a little while to establish it. You know, we did a major golf course or involved with a major golf course renovation this past summer at Kiawiki up on the lake, and resprigging Bermuda fairways and even sodding Zoysia tees and Zoysia greens. And everybody up there professional, the golf superintendent and all the professionals up there that are on that job site understand that it's not going to be fully matured really until we get to the end of the following summer. So just, you know, you're doing all you can do at this point. I think you're headed in the right direction. Manage water is what I would suggest.
Yes, and it does have very good drainage.
Good.
In all the areas that I did, and I'm using a lawn service, so it's, you know, it's getting its spraying as it should and fertilization and those kind of things. I just wondered if there's anything else out of the ordinary that needed to be done, because it appeared that it did get established very well.
Good. So you should be in good shape. Like I said to our previous caller, hopefully you heard that, be on the lookout for some large patch activity as the soil's warm in the spring this year. I'm sure, you know, if you'll tune in, make sure you're tuning into the show. It's my way of plugging and say, hey, Randy, make sure you listen to the show every Saturday. But, you know, we'll talk more about that as we get into spring, because I do think that's going to be probably, I don't know if we'll see as much winter kill at this point. My prediction would be if we're not going to see as much winter kill on these warm season lawns as we saw last year, but I do feel like we're going to see a fair amount of disease issues come spring of the year because of the excessive moisture that we had in the
right.
fall and going into winter.
Well, I'm not far from the lineman store and go
Perfect.
There quite frequently, so I'll drop in.
Sounds great, Randy. We appreciate the call and hope you have a Merry Christmas.
You too. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Man, I tell you, we got some great calls today, didn't we? You ask and you shall receive. We have been blessed with the great calls. Great participants today. We have one more on hold. We have Larry, who's been waiting patiently in Graycore. Hello, Larry, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Yeah, good morning. I've got a small live Christmas tree, and it's very small, but I'm wondering when's the best time to transplant that thing and for the best result.
Well, you say you have, is it inside right now, or?
Yeah, it's inside, yeah.
Okay.
And I'm making sure it's watered and got sunshine in the window and all that business and before I decorate it.
Do you know what variety of tree it is?
It's a spruce. I'm thinking Albany spruce, if memory okay. serves.
There's a lot of different spruces out there. My suggestion, enjoy it for the holiday season, because that's where you want it, inside, correct? So
right.
Enjoy it for the holiday season, and when we catch some mild days, I would slowly transition that tree to the outdoors, okay? And we need to somewhat, it's what we would call hardening off, because if we take a plant that's been accustomed to living in your house where, you know, it's in the 60s all day, every day, or maybe it's in the 70s if you live with my wife, who's a little bit cold natured, but it's warm in your house all day, and it's warm 24/7. And if you take this and immediately put it outside and it's really frigid temperatures, you're going to somewhat shock that plant. So you need to kind of slowly transition it outdoors once Christmas season's over with. And any time this winter after Christmas, once you've transitioned it for, you know, give it a week, maybe 2 weeks, maybe set it outside during the day when it's cooler. If it's going to be, you know, 20s or teens at night, which it could be in January in Graycore, I'd probably bring it back in, or maybe put it in a garage where it's non-heated, or put it somewhere where it's protected. And then eventually you can plant it out, I would say, by mid to late January. Plant it outdoors. Your success is, you know, do a little bit of research, figure out exactly what variety it is. Even if it says, hey, this thing is more native to the Pacific Northwest, which a lot of our spruces are, or maybe to the western states, doesn't mean you can't grow them in upstate South Carolina, but we need to look for maybe a little bit protected area in the landscape. You know, we don't want to plant it maybe out. If it likes a cooler environment, we probably don't want to plant it out in the middle of a 10-acre farm field where it gets beat down with the hot summer sun. We probably want to plant it on the edge of a tree line where it can stay a little bit cooler and a little damp. Because a lot of times these spruces also like damp feet during the growing
That's
season.
That's the opposite of what I was thinking. I've got a great open space, and I was thinking of putting it there.
push it kind of back in that corner of that open space where maybe it can, especially in the heat of the summer, where it can get a little bit of shade later in the day.
And if you're going to plant in the spring, go ahead and do a soil test now, because those spruces like a high pH.
Yep.
Yeah. High pH, that would translate to a low acidity.
That's correct.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. So you want a 6.0 to 7.5 pH balance.
Okay. I got you.
All right.
All righty. I appreciate you guys. I enjoy your show. Listen faithfully, and hope you all have a Merry Christmas.
And you as well.
You do the same. Merry Christmas, Larry. Great call there, Scott, wouldn't you say?
I would. Man, I like spruces.
I do, too. And, you know, you used to see a lot of B&B Christmas trees. You don't really see them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see bald and burlaps, 6, 7, 8, 10, 12-foot trees. Don't see those much anymore. Do see a few potted ones. Now, I don't want listeners to get confused, like the Norfolk pine that you see with the little red bows. Oh, they're so pretty. They don't grow in the landscape around here, folks. That is a tropical plant, believe it or not. That's from the tropics, okay? Like the equator region. It likes hot, steamy weather. So it does not like our winters. Now, if you want to plant it outside for hot, steamy weather in the summer, it'll grow. Grows great. But once we start looking at frost next fall, probably need to dig it up, repot it, and bring it inside if you want it to survive. It's not going to make
it. Big container with the caster wheels.
Hey, Scott, what is the best way to replace Bermuda grass with fescue bluegrass mix? Well, the best time is going to be in the fall of the year. We're kind of past it, and here's why. We've got to eradicate the Bermuda. If you've got Bermuda, you're going to have to go out there and spray some non-selective herbicide 3 to 4 times on 2-week intervals to assure that you have eradicated all the Bermuda within the lawn. Then you can come back and seed with fescue bluegrass mix, or if you want instant gratification, you could sod it. I say instant. See, I'm bad. I'm making it sound like carpet.
Right.
Yeah. But it is instant gratification because it covers the soil immediately. And what it does, it's not instant like carpet. It's instant because aesthetically it's instant. But you still have to establish a root system, which is – but if I seed fescue, man, it's going to take me 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 15, 16 weeks. It's going to take me a while to get established, matured lawn, right? Maybe till spring. If I sod it, I'm going to have it established and ready to go before the depths of winter hit, right? So we can establish it quicker. That's the key with sod. It's about quicker establishment is what it's all about. Scott, I do want to stay with the phone lines. We have Wally in Simpsonville. Hello, Wally, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Hello. Enjoy y'all show. Listen every weekend. In fact, just to brag a little bit, I bought some sod for my backyard from y'all. It's done great. I've had it in there for 3 years.
Oh, great.
Bermuda.
I was sweating bullets. I was afraid you were going to tell me you bought sod and it all died.
No. I bought it in June, and, of course, it was like one of the hottest summers we ever had about 3 years ago, and I had to water the heck out of it, but it made it, and it's looking great now. The question I called in about, though, was I have some hydrangeas. I got 4 hydrangeas I planted in the front yard, and last couple of years I've noticed that they get these little black spots on them. And the leaves just don't look good toward the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
I did a little bit of research online, found out it was some kind of fungus. And I'm just trying to figure out what I need to use to kill that off next year or treat it next year when they come back.
Yeah, I would imagine it sounds like a leaf spot, something along that lines. I'd imagine anything that contains daconil would do this. Now, I will warn you with this. A lot of our contact fungicides, Wally, is when we use them late in the summer, it's really hot, really intense heat. We have to be very careful of spraying that. We don't want to spray it during the middle of the day. We want to make sure we're doing it early morning or late in the evening, almost nightfall, or when the sun sets, because they are – they can be a little bit phytotoxic to plant leaves, especially something that's lush and green like a hydrangea leaf. But that's probably coming as a result, too. I imagine this is a shadier environment because it is a hydrangea, and hopefully you have it in a little bit shadier environment, and maybe tucked in a corner,
right,
not out in the middle of the yard in full sun. So,
right. It gets morning sun,
yep,
and shade in the afternoon.
Okay, so if we prune the plant so that it can have a little bit more open growth for this season, and now we can prune it because it's dormant. So if we prune it so it has a little bit more open growth and a little bit more air movement, you may find that we have less disease on it and not even have to spray a fungicide. And the disease, I doubt the disease is ever going to get to the point where it's 100% detrimental, going to kill that plant. It's probably more of an aesthetic,
cosmetic looks bad
situation. So think about that. How can we improve the air movement around in that area too?
How do you prune? Hydrangea.
Go in there now that the leaves have fallen off and just cut those stems out. And the ones that where you think you got too many is too thick, cut them all the way down at the base, something of that nature. Similar to pruning an azalea. You want to thin the plant out a little bit, okay?
Okay.
Wally, have a great weekend and a Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you, sir. You too.
All right. Bye-bye. Scott, one last interesting fact about the poinsettia.
Go ahead.
December the 12th is Poinsettia Day. And it marks the death of Joel Poinsett. Interesting. I didn't know that.
December 12th.
Let's remember that next year. Folks, you've been listening to the Yard Pro Show today, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. You can find us during the week at www.carolinafreshfarms.com. We hope you have a happy week gardening, and Merry Christmas to you all.